Voices woke her. They were calling her name, and she couldn't remember where she was. It wasn't her bed, or her room, or her house, because there was a dawn-stained sky overhead. Her clothes were wet with dew. Kara! She was on the edge of calling back, when the last forgetfulness of sleep slid off her mind. She clamped a hand over her mouth as if her arm didn't trust her throat to stay quiet. She scrambled to her feet. Mama Bird and the little ones were already on the pond. The dead, black eyes didn't take Kara in. The cart squatted where she'd left it. She snatched the little bag of food out of it, took two steps toward the voices, and then two away. Her mind felt like it was buzzing. If she told them now, they'd call the soldiers. They'd come and they'd track down the dogs. She didn't think they'd wait for Zan to come back. And he had to come back. But there were only so many paths. They'd find her at the pond, and soon, she'd have to say something, wouldn't she? And what if they didn't let her come back? She felt like she was struggling with the dilemma, even as she trotted out toward the forest and the darkness under the fronds. She pushed through the underbrush, twigs and the stick-hard fingers of the scrub sliding off her. A rough break in the plants showed where the animal path led away to the south, and she followed it. She'd never gone past the pond before. There were probably surveys of the land somewhere, or maybe not. A decade was a long time to live somewhere, but a planet was larger than the best intentions. She might be going places humans had never been before, or no one except for Zan, anyway. The voices grew more distant, but still clear. Her legs ached, but the work of moving fought back the cold. The voices went silent. She thought maybe they'd given up looking for her, but when they started again, there were more. Voices she recognized. Instructor Hanu, Stephen De Camp, Mary Tenenbaum, her father. "Baby girl," he cried. His voice sounded raw, like he was hurting himself by shouting. "Baby girl, if you're out there, we're right here, baby." She wanted to go back to him, to tell him everything was all right, that she was, and that Zan was too. Tears rose up in her eyes, blurring the world. "Sorry," she said softly, pushing forward. "I'm so sorry." She didn't stop until the sound of the voices was gone. The search would keep going, though. There would be drones. There would be thermal scanning. If the soldiers helped, there would be visuals taken from orbit. She stayed under the canopy of fronds. There were plenty of large animals in the forest. It wouldn't be easy to tell which heat came from them and which came from her. At least she hoped it wouldn't. The sun tracked through the sky, changing the angle of the few thin dapples that pushed down into the permanent twilight of the forest. Kara felt herself getting tired. She'd have to rest. She'd have to eat. And at some point, she'd have to find her way back to the pond. She had to be there when the dogs came back with Zan. After that, everything would be better. She found a place where the long brown stone pushed up out of the land. It was too round to be a real bench, and whatever the blue moss was growing on, it felt slick and oily. She sat there anyway. The fruit and rice tasted better than it ever had at home, and the water was sweet. She hadn't realized how dry her throat had become until she drank. Her muscles twitched with fatigue. It wasn't a bad feeling. The forest around her was hushed, but not silent. Little things the size of her thumb ticked at her from the trees. They had big, wet eyes, and tiny mandibles that looked like they were frozen in permanent comic alarm. A bird fluttered by on wide, leathery wings, landed on a frond across the way from her, and muttered to itself like a bored child in school. The soft breeze smelled like burnt coffee and fresh grass and rubbing alcohol. An insect buzzed past on bright wings that left a little rainbow after image on her eyes. A sense of peace crept over her, and it felt like the world had sat beside her, opened its own lunch bag, and was just being with her. Everything about the little space was beautiful and calm and rich with a million things that no one had ever seen before. And every place was like this. The whole planet and a solar system beyond it. There would be caves somewhere with fish-like things living in the waters. There would be ocean coves with tide pools filled with living systems that weren't animals and weren't plants, that didn't have names or an idea of names. She tried to imagine what it would be like going back to Earth, where everything was already known and there weren't any miracles left. It seemed sad. She pinched the last grain of rice between her fingertips and dropped it on her tongue. She didn't know if the adults were still searching for her. She didn't know how long it would take the dogs to bring back Zan. She'd have to go back home eventually for fresh water and food. But just then, just for that moment, she could let herself feel at peace. She pushed the empty water bottle back in her pocket, folded the empty bag, and shoved it in too. She didn't want to hurry for fear of hearing her name called in a familiar voice. She couldn't stay for fear of missing the dogs. There wasn't a perfect answer, but she didn't need a perfect one. Good enough was good enough. Making her way home was harder than leaving had been, which made some sense to her. Going away from a point, there were any number of paths, and all of them were right. Going back to the point, most paths were wrong. The rock deer trail wasn't as clear now that she was walking back along it. Branches and turns she hadn't noticed on the way out confused her now, and as the sunlight changed its angle and warmth, the colors under the forest canopy changed. Twice, she backtracked to a place she was almost sure was part of the right way and tried again, making other decisions. The sunlight had started to shift into gray and orange, the air to grow cool, when she came around a stand of trees, and the dogs were scattered there, legs tucked primly beneath their bodies. Their embarrassed, apologetic eyes shifted toward her as she came forward. Excitement or fear or both raced through Kara's body like an electrical shock. And then, Zan sat up, his head turning toward her. He was changed. That was obvious. He was still wearing his funeral whites, but a long, black stain ran from his left shoulder down to his belly. His skin had a grayness where the red of blood should have been. His eyes had gone pure black. When he moved, it had the same utter stillness broken by considered action as Mama Bird, like every muscle that fired had been thought about for a fraction of a second first. But his hair still stood out in all directions the way it did when he had just gotten up in the morning. His mouth was the same gentle curve that he'd inherited from their dad. "Zan," she whispered. He was still as stone for a moment. Then he shifted his head. "I feel weird," he said, and his voice was his own. Her grin was so wide it hurt her face. She rushed the last meter between them and hugged him, lifting him up in her arms. For a moment, it was like lifting the dead weight of his corpse. Then his arms were around her too, his head against her neck. "I was scared," he said. "There was something wrong. And someone was talking to me, only they weren't talking to me." "There was an accident," Kara said. "You got hurt, really hurt, killed hurt." A hesitation. "Oh," Zan said. She stepped back, but she kept hold of his hand. She didn't want to let go of him. He blinked. "I feel pretty good for killed. I brought you to the dogs. They fix things." "Like me," Zan said, and then, "There's something wrong with how things look." "I guess they had to change you some," she said. The nearest dog shifted and looked away, as if chagrined by the limits of their powers. Kara shook her head. "It's okay. This is wonderful. Thank you. There are things I didn't see before," Zan said. The words sounded faint, like he was speaking them from farther off than right here in front of her. "There are other things here. I don't know what they are." Kara tugged on his hand, pulling him along with her the way she used to sometimes before. "Come on, it's getting late. We should get home." "What does it mean to be in a substrate?" "I don't know," Kara said, tugging him again. "Let's go ask Mom, if I can figure out how to get there from here." She turned to the nearest dog and bowed. She didn't know why that seemed like the thing to do, but it did. "Thank you so much for bringing my brother back to us. If there's anything I can do to help you, just let me know and I'll do it. Really." The dog made a chirping noise. And then they all rose as one, walking away through the forest on their strangely jointed legs. She half expected them to start their Kikako song. They only faded into the forest again, as if it was the place where they most belonged. Kara started out for what she was pretty sure was south, and Zan followed along behind, his cool gray hand still in hers. She didn't find the pond, but a break in the trees opened up on the road to her house. The charcoal sky of twilight glittered with stars and the stick moons. At least now she knew where she was and how to get where she wanted to be. She just hoped no one would see them along the way. She wanted her parents to be the first to see what she'd accomplished. A soft breeze came from the north and set the fronds of the trees clacking against each other. They walked the same way they came home from school every day, all of it familiar, even through the changes. Kara was already imagining a bowl of barley soup and her bed, and waking up in the morning to the amazement and wonder of the town. Zan asked how he'd died, and she spent the walk telling the story of his death, his funeral, everyone who'd come, how she'd made sure his body had stayed there for her to steal. He listened more intensely than he ever had before, and hardly interrupted at all. "The head of the soldiers really came to see me?" Zan asked when she was done. "He did." "Do you think he'll want to see us again now that I'm back? I don't want to get them in trouble." "Them." He meant the dogs. Kara felt a moment's unease. The soldiers would want to know about the dogs, about Mama Bird and the drone and Zan, especially with the dogs showing up after the stick moons came alive. She'd have to talk to her parents about what to tell the soldiers and how to tell it to them. She thought of Winston, the way he listened. "I need your family to be well." "The Admiral understands," she said. "He knows that Laconia is not like other places." Zan thought about that a beat too long, then nodded more to himself than to her. The house glowed from every window. Every light in every room had to be burning. It wasn't like her parents to run the power down like that. And they were there, too, framed in the window, like it was the screen of her handheld. Her mother standing in the kitchen, hands on the counter, her father sitting at the table. They looked as tired as Kara felt. She wondered if they'd been searching for her all day, if there were still people out there looking. Zan stopped, staring at the house with his newly black eyes. His face was all stunned amazement, as if he was seeing it all for the first time. In a way, he was. Kara squeezed his fingers gently. He didn't follow her right away when she walked toward the front door. Kara stopped and waved him forward. "It's going to be okay," she said. When she opened the door, her mother startled as if Kara had fired a gun, then rushed at her and grabbed her by the arms hard enough to hurt. "What did you do?" her mother growled through rage-bared teeth. "What the fuck did you do?" And then she pulled Kara close in a hug so tight it felt like drowning. Her mother's sobs shook them both. Kara put her arms around her mother and found she was crying a little too. Guilt and joy and the echoing sorrow of Zan's death and the triumph of his return all washed together in the moment, and she held on to her mother's body like she hadn't since she was a baby. "It's okay, Mama," she said through her tears. "It's all okay now." Her father said her mother's name, Dot, one low syllable, but with alarm in it louder than a shout. Zan stood just outside the open door, in the space where he wasn't exactly in the darkness or in the light. His funeral whites carried so much dirt and stain, they were like camouflage. His bare feet were filthy. The angle of his eyebrows over his black, wet eyes reminded Kara of the dogs, uncertain, embarrassed, apologetic. He stepped through the doorway, into the house, and went still. Then, in a flicker, lifted his hands toward them all like a baby reaching for an embrace. His fingernails were dirty. The grayness of his skin made his face seem smudged even where it wasn't. Kara felt her mother gasp, a sharp, sudden inhalation, and didn't breathe out. Her arms went stiff around Kara, grabbing her in so much it hurt. Zan tried a smile. His gaze clicked from Kara to their father, to their mother, and back to Kara as fast as an insect leg twitching. He spread his fingers wider, took another step forward. "It's okay," Kara said. "I got him back." Her mother yanked her back, grabbing Kara up and away with a violence that hurt her neck. Kara was back behind the counter, her feet off the floor, her mother's arms pressing the air out of her almost before she realized they were moving. Her father pushed them both behind him. She didn't understand why he had a knife in his hand. "Gary?" her mother said. "What the fuck is that?" "I see it," her father said. "It's real." Kara couldn't speak. She didn't have the air. She wriggled against her mother's grip. She had to explain, to tell them what was going on. This wasn't how it was supposed to happen. "I want a hug too," Zan said. Zan took another awkward step forward, still, and then the flicker of motion, then still again. Her father yelled a deep, ragged sound, too big for the man she knew. He lunged toward Zan, knife shining in his fist, and terror flooded Kara's blood. She kicked at her mother hard and felt the blow connect, the grip around her released a little. "Stop it!" Kara screamed. What are you doing? Zan blocked the knife with his hand, the gray skin opening and black blood pouring from his palm. Zan's eyes went wide with shock. Her father barreled forward, still shouting wordlessly. He grabbed Zan's funeral whites and lifted the little boy off the floor. Kara pushed against her mother's neck hard and stumbled to the floor. Her mother was keening now, a high, tight sound of panic. Her father had the pantry door open. He threw Zan into it and slammed the door shut, still yelling. There were words in it now. He was shouting, "Leave my family alone!" "What is the matter with you?" Kara shouted. She punched her father's back and then froze. She'd never hit him before. She'd never hit anyone before. He didn't even notice. He grabbed one of the kitchen stools and used it to jam the pantry door closed. Zan banged against the door harder than Kara would have thought he could. Her mother yelped and started cursing fast and low, almost under her breath. It sounded like praying. Tears were streaming down Kara's cheeks, but she wasn't sad. All she felt was a powerful, growing outrage. "I brought him back," she yelled. "He was dead, and I took him to the dogs, and they fixed him."
"Dogs?" her father said. "What dogs?"
"The dogs that came after the stick moons turned on," Kara said. There was so much they didn't understand, and the words were like trying to drink through too thin a straw. The meaning wouldn't all fit. "They fixed Mama Bird and the drone, and they fixed Zan because I asked them to, and he's back. I brought him back, and you hurt him." She heard her mother somewhere behind her, talking into her handheld. "I need the military liaison. It's an emergency." Kara's outrage and impatience felt like venom in her blood. She pushed at the stool, trying to get the pantry door open again. Her father grabbed her shoulders, pulled her close, until his face was the whole world.
"That's not your brother," her father said, biting off each word. "That's not Zan."
"It is. The dead don't come back," her father said. "They do here," Kara said.
"His eyes," he said, shaking her as he spoke. "The way he moves. That's not a human, baby girl. That's something else wearing my little boy's skin."
"So what?" Kara said. "He knows everything Zan knows. He loves everything Zan loves. That makes him Zan. How can you do this to him just because he's not perfect?"
Her mother's voice came, hard as stone.
"They're sending a force from town."
"The soldiers?" Kara said, pulling away from her father's grip. "You called the soldiers on him? You hate the soldiers."
She grabbed at the stool again, but her mother lifted her from behind, hauled her feet off the floor, and carried her back toward her room. Zan was calling from the pantry, his voice muted and rough with tears and confusion. Kara tried to twist back toward him, tried to reach for him. Her mother pushed her into her room and blocked the door with her body. When she looked down at Kara, her expression was blank and hard.
"It's going to be all right," her mother said, "but you have to stay here until I get this under control."
A rush of thoughts fought for Kara's voice. "It was under control, and why are you making this a bad thing? And you let Daddy cut Zan," and left her sputtering and incoherent. The door closed. Kara bawled her hands, screamed, and pounded the wall. Her parents' voices came from the house in clipped, hard syllables that she couldn't make out. She sat on the edge of her futon, bent double, and put her head in her tingling hands. Her blood felt bright with rage, but she had to think. The soldiers were coming. Her parents were going to let them take Zan away, make them take Zan away. They'd said the dogs were bad, dangerous. They might hurt them. All because it didn't work like this,
on Earth.
The room was filled with her things. Her clothes, clean and folded in the dresser and worn and scattered on the floor by the hamper. The picture over her bed of dinosaurs running from a man in a big pink hat. The picture she'd made when she was 7 from Laconian grass and paste, with instructor Hanu's note, "Good work," beside it. The tablet with her book on it. She scooped it up, turned it on. It was still open to the page of Ashby Allen Ackerman in Paris. The old woman feeding bread to the birds. She put her fingertips on the picture. It wasn't a real woman. It wasn't even a real painting. It was just the idea of an idea. It didn't have anything to do with her life, and she didn't lose anything by letting it go. She closed the book and opened the recording function. She felt the time slipping past, but she took a long look around the room all the same. Her whole life was here, written in little notes and objects that added up to a story that only she would understand. Or else no one would. The window was easy to open, but the screen was harder to rip than she'd expected. Once she'd gotten a hole big enough for a couple of fingers, it got easier to pull it apart, but it still hurt her fingertips. A little puff of dust came off the fibers when she ripped the hole big enough that she could squeeze through it. The empty water bottle slipped out of her pocket as she climbed out, clattering onto the paving outside her window. She didn't go back for it. She ran across the road to where the underbrush started getting thick. High clouds interrupted the stars in streaks, as if giant claws had ripped strips out of the sky. The light in the house and the darkness of the world let her see her mother and father in the room perfectly. Her father had a length of metal as long as his arm held in both hands like a club. He was crying, but he didn't wipe the tears away. He wouldn't put the weapon down long enough for that. Her mother stood at the door, ready to usher the soldiers in when they came. It would be soon. Town wasn't far away when you had military transport vehicles. Kara started the tablet recording. She took a deep, slow breath, waited 15 seconds, and screamed, "Mama!" Her mother's head came up sharply as she looked out into the darkness of the night. Kara tapped the playback and loop, threw the volume to max, and then flung the tablet as hard as she could into the brush. Her mother came out the front door, scanning but blind from the light. From the brush, Kara's voice came again. "Mama!" "Kara," her mother said, "where are you?" Her father came to the door. She heard him say, "What is it?" Kara started running. She heard her own voice again, behind her, and her mother screaming for her, and her father now too. She didn't have much time. She looped around the back of the house and in the back door, opening it carefully to keep from making noise. Both her parents had gone out the front to find her, to save her. Their voices reminded her of the search party that she'd avoided. All the ways they wanted to help her, but never asked how she wanted to be helped. She kicked the stool away and hauled open the pantry door. Zan was kneeling in the darkness, his legs folded under him just like the dog's. Wet tracks of tears marked his cheeks. His black eyes took her in. She held out her hand. "Come on," she said. "We have to warn the dogs." The front door stood open. Across the road, the brush crackled and hushed as her parents crashed through it, calling her name. They sounded frightened. Kara felt sorry for them, but they'd made their choices. She'd made hers. Zan took her hand with his uninjured one, and she hauled him up.
Then they were running out the back, into the night, toward the dogs, wherever they were. Zan matched her stride for stride, never letting go of her hand. Her parents' voices faded behind her. She didn't know if they'd found her tablet, or if she'd just gotten far enough away that the sound wouldn't reach her. It didn't matter. Zan laughed, and the sound was just like the joy he'd had playing a game with his friends. She felt herself smiling. The feeling of freedom lifted her up, even with the knowledge of the soldiers following behind her, even with the grief just starting in her heart that she'd never go home. The night was hers, and Laconia was hers, and that was joyous. Her legs burned, and she felt lightheaded from hunger. She hadn't had anything to eat since the fruit and rice in the forest, and there wouldn't be anything for her out in the world. All the plants that Laconia grew were indigestible for her at best, poison at worst. The sunbirds, the blue clover, the grunchers, the glass snakes, everything alive knew at a chemical level that she wasn't one of them. But that didn't matter either. The worst that could happen was she'd die. The dogs would fix her. This has been Strange Dogs, an Expanse novella. Written by James S.A. Corey. Read by Jefferson Mays. Produced by Elise Green. Directed by Peter Ganim. Recorded by Pavel Rivera. Post-production by Gabino Reyes. Text copyright 2017 by Daniel Abraham and Ty Frank. Audio production copyright 2017 Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this book without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the book, other than for review purposes, please contact the publisher. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales, is entirely coincidental.